Good morning. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and you're listening to The Current. Well, it's Thursday, so we will be digging into the mailbag, this time with guest host Jennifer Fry. But first, we begin with a debate about Canada's role on the world stage. Well, so far in this federal election campaign, each party has kept the focus of its policies and promises pretty close to home. Even media coverage has mostly been concerned with domestic issues such as health care, poverty, or government corruption. But with an American election looming, a tricky handover in Iraq nearing its deadline, and political instability in Africa making the headlines, we've decided to travel beyond our borders. We're going to debate Canada's role in the world, but before we do, here's a snippet from last week's leaders' debate, when foreign policy actually did spark a fiery moment.
We had a debate over Iraq, but what really mattered in Iraq in the end was nobody really cared because we had so little to contribute to these kinds of debates. I want to make sure, whether we go to these things or don't go, that our voice is meaningful.
You were rather silent on Iraq at the time. In fact, you appointed Mr. Pratt, who was one of the ones who advocated we go in, as your defense minister. And before you know it, we were off discussing missile defense with George Bush.
I think we have to have very clean relations with Americans, very clear relations. And tell them what we think freely. They went in Iraq, we were opposed to that. And also fight for our industries like the softwood lumber.
What we are very interested in is building the kind of defense policy that will support peacemaking and peacekeepers. When we went in to Haiti, when we went into Afghanistan to do institution building, that's really what the modern defense policy is going to be all about, helping weak countries become strong democracies.
Well, those were the party leaders from last week's debates. To talk about what Canada's role should be internationally, I am joined by three people who know these issues well. Barbara McDougall is the former Secretary of State for External Affairs in Brian Mulroney's Progressive Conservative government. She's now an advisor at the law firm of Aird and Burless. Good morning.
Good morning.
Jerry Kaplan is a former General Secretary of the NDP. He has been involved in African and Third World issues for decades and worked at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. Good morning.
Hi, Anna Maria.
And Akash Maharaj was the Liberal Party's National Policy Chair for 5 years. He is currently the president of Concordis, a not-for-profit organization dedicated to international peace and armed conflict resolution. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, Akash Maharaj, I want to start with you. Why is Canada's place on the world stage so important right now? What's different about the issues that our political leaders are grappling with today?
I think in many ways this is Canada's time on the international stage. The international system has been fairly stable for a long time. It's been defined by a balance of power between great states almost going back to the Peace of Westphalia 250 years ago. But in a single generation, we have seen the end of the Cold War and the end of communism, the rise of globalization, and the eruption of non-state actors on the international scene. The structures that defined what the international system were have essentially evaporated before our eyes, and it is no exaggeration to say that the choices that we make today will quite literally decide the fate of the world.
Barbara McDougall, what do you think?
Well, certainly the historical analysis is right, and I agree that now is a very important time. I think Canada has to take a look at its priorities. Canada has been a non-player for a decade, and I would, in our own government, we had to make some cutbacks. But I think the beginning of the decline in Canada's role abroad was the helicopter fiasco, because that was the beginning of the end of equipment purchases. Our foreign aid budget went way down. And now, when the world is kind of groping for new kinds of leadership, and there is a significant role for us to play, we're not in a position to do so.
Jerry Kaplan.
I'm a little more cautious, strangely enough. I think that Canadians have an overripe view of how influential Canada is in the world. I agree in this respect with Barbara almost completely that we are a relatively minor force, punching far below our weight. I'm not sure it's because of the helicopters, but if you look at our role in Africa, if you look at our role in conflict resolution, you look at our role in peacekeeping, Canadians, I think, would be very surprised how insignificant a role we really play and how rarely we're looked to. Where I'm not sure I agree completely with Akash is whether this is Canada's moment to change history. And I don't think it's a very easy thing for a middle country like ours to jump into the terribly complicated world that we see out there.
Okay, well, if we're going to talk about international relations, we can start right over the border. Our foreign policy has to take into account what the U.S. administration is doing. Some critics accuse the previous Liberal governments of creating a frosty relationship with the Americans. For example, Francie Ducrot, Chrétien's former communications director, referred to the U.S. president as a moron. In the lead-up to the Iraq War, Liberal MP Carolyn Parrish referred to our southern neighbors as damn Americans and then said, I hate those bastards. Barbara McDougall, what do you think about our country's current relationship with the U.S.? How defined is it by what some call anti-Americanism?
I think that has been an issue. What Canadians understand viscerally, but has not been apparent in the last few years, is that because the U.S. is our biggest trading partner, our security partner, I mean, we have to get along with the U.S. We have to have a strong relationship with them. That is independent of whether you like the current administration in the U.S. Disagreements with an administration make that more difficult, and I do think that Jean Chrétien allowed that anti-American head of steam to build up, whereas he could have calmed it down without ever agreeing with them. But it's so much an important part of Canadian life. I mean, $1 million in trade a minute across that border.
Jerry Kaplan.
I have a very different and difficult view. I agree that if you're not on good terms with the United States, it can cause Canada extreme difficulty and maybe even considerable hardship. On the other hand, I don't regard American policies over the years favorably. I consider that American exceptionalism, the notion that America is a benign power, that it's a virtuous power, and that just about everything it does is pretty good, I regard that as an historical untruth. And if we had enough time, I could sit here and demonstrate the way it's been a rogue nation, the way state terrorism has affected countries everywhere from South America to Africa to Southeast Asia over the years. So in my view, American policy is very dangerous policy, and American governments have been fomenting very dangerous policies in the world. If a politician of standing, a responsibility, stood up and said these things about the United States, even in terms less flamboyant than the ones you quoted earlier, calling them morons or calling them jerks or whatever, if you did that, you would be clobbered. You'd be clobbered by public opinion in Canada, you'd be clobbered by the media in Canada, and you'd be clobbered by Americans themselves. And I don't want to recommend that as a policy.
Well, some would say what you're saying now is anti-American.
Well, I mean, it is an anti-American policies. It absolutely is. And it's anti-governments that support policies that I consider aggressive and support torture and dictatorships and authoritarian governments all over the world. I mean, it is anti that, and I'm explicit about it. Does it mean I don't love America? No, I love America. I love going to New York. I love going to Los Angeles. I love the theater. I mean, it doesn't seem to me helpful or particularly worrisome when people are going to do some knee-jerk thing about anti-Americanism.
Akash Maharaj, you want to jump in here?
Well, obviously I will not defend the indefensible and say that the comments that you quoted earlier are anything but unacceptable, not merely because they have did cast at least a temporary chill over our relationship with the Americans, but also because they were ungracious and vulgar and should not be uttered about anyone. Having said that, I think that another impact of those comments was that it allowed some elements to argue that disagreeing with American policy was tantamount to anti-Americanism, and I do not take that view at all. Canada has a duty to ourselves, to the international community, and indeed to the Americans as our allies, to try to recall them to the lighter angels of their own conscience. If the Americans, as a nation that is sincerely founded upon high ideals of liberty and justice, if they were to prosecute those ideals as vigorously in the international community as they do, as they celebrate them within their own borders, both they and the rest of the world would be much safer.
Well, there are many people who say we need to be closer to the U.S. and our foreign policy objectives, some of your opinions aside. Now, the Liberals have not ruled out a joint missile defense program. The Conservative platform calls for a customs union and says our ambassador to the U.S. should be in the Canadian cabinet. So, Jerry Kaplan, let me start with you. How closely should we align ourselves with the U.S. on certain foreign policy goals, especially right now in these times fighting terrorism, security?
I think the right verb is how close must we be, because if we're not, we will pay serious penalties. I actually am prepared to believe that the Martin government's interest in signing on with missile defense or Star Wars, which I think it really is a political judgment, not an objective judgment about security. I think they think if they didn't do that, the Americans would be so angry that we would be paying the penalty for a long time. I consider terrorism a serious threat, but I haven't the slightest idea what to do about it. It's also clear to me that most people in Washington and Ottawa don't have the slightest idea what to do about it. I think we have to work together with them carefully within the rule of law on making sure that terrorists aren't allowed into Canada or North America. On the other hand, it becomes complicated, Anna Maria. Somewhere or other, Maher Arar paid the penalty of working closely between the intelligence services of Canada and the United States. But for me, Canadian sovereignty and a different set of values is very important, and I don't frankly share many of the values that American foreign policy does.
Having a good working relationship with the U.S. does not exclude being a strongly sovereign nation. Quite the reverse. I think we have to be a strong sovereign nation in order to do that well. And that means in part paying our way. It means being able to make a contribution, not just to military equipment, but also to foreign aid, to our diplomatic corps, to guarding our shores. I mean, there are a whole lot of issues.
So how closely should we align ourselves with the U.S. on issues like fighting terrorism and security?
Well, fighting terrorism and security, I think we should probably align ourselves pretty closely because of that border. If you fly over Southern Ontario or any place along the border in Canada in a small plane, you see lots of opportunity for terrorists. Damage, nuclear plants in Southern Ontario, big dams in the Columbia River. And we need both sides of the border to be guarding against damage on that kind of basis. The same with the Ambassador Bridge.
I just want to remind our listeners that we are having a panel discussion on Canada's place on the world stage. This is The Current on CBC Radio 1. Barbara McDougall is the former Secretary of State for External Affairs with the Progressive Conservative Party, now an advisor with the law firm of Aird and Burliss. Jerry Kaplan is a former General Secretary with the NDP and now works in the area of Africa and developing countries. And Akash Maharaj is the former National Policy Chair with the Liberal Party and currently the President of Concordis, a not-for-profit organization dedicated to international peace and armed conflict resolution. Barbara McDougall, should we have sent troops into Iraq?
Well, I supported the war in Iraq. I thought it was worth taking Saddam Hussein out. We did not have much to send. I think the best role that Canada could have played, and I don't like dealing in hindsight. I mean, I'm obviously not happy about the way the war got implemented. But what Canada should have been doing in hindsight was to say, look, we understand the way the U.S. feels after 9/11. We understand the damage that Saddam Hussein has inflicted on his own people and therefore on the world. We think there should be UN resolution. We're going to work very hard to make sure that the parties in the UN are talking. Instead, we sent Paul Heinbecker in right at the last minute. That's all we did.
Our ambassador
to the United Nations, who made a brilliant speech, and nobody was listening. So there was no backdoor stuff that had been going on through that previous 6 months where we might have still played a marginally useful role.
Akash, should we have sent our troops into Iraq?
Absolutely not. No matter how one wishes to dress up the diplomacy, there is no escaping the fact that the United States justified the invasion of Iraq based on the need to remove weapons of mass destruction that ultimately proved never to have been there, that they popularized the war with their own people by suggesting a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, which the 9/11 Commission also concedes never existed. The fact that the main product of the war has been some 10,000 Iraqi civilians dead, an Arab world that has been largely, that is united as never before against American interest, and international institutions that have been brought into greater disrepute, I think is the single greatest set of arguments against an invasion that was illegal, unjust, and counterproductive. I think that we did the right thing by not going into Iraq, not simply because it would have been contributing to some of the scenes of horror and loss that we're now witnessing, but also because as a middle power, as a country with a historic commitment to multilateralism and democracy in the international sphere, we have a duty to stand up for what is right, even when it is difficult. And we as a country, if we have a creed, it is that we will stand with the angels, even if we must stand alone.
I try to be realistic, as you see I'm trying to be this morning about it. I would have liked, you know what I would have liked? I would have liked Canada to lead the world in a campaign against the obvious American intention to go in and overthrow this guy for reasons that had nothing whatsoever to do with anything George Bush said. I mean, we all knew at the time how phony the arguments were. We knew that the neocons had been plotting this since 1991. This was all public. This was all written out. The audience can't see that Barbara is smiling here, but it was all available. We knew the books. We knew the writings. We knew the guys involved. Nothing was... I don't recommend that Canada do that. I know that if we had done that, we would have gotten the administration in Washington would have taken us to the cleaners. So we played, frankly, probably realistically, the best role that we can. Chrétien didn't make it a great mortal crusade. He one day made the announcement. Canada was thrilled. And I wanted then, and I want now, to impose the same standards, the same moral values on American policy and on foreign dictators as I do on Canadian policy and Canadian politicians. I want to ask, how can we work with the dictators who run the stand countries? How can we work with the dictators in Saudi Arabia? Why is Musharraf in Pakistan okay, but Saddam Hussein was not okay? And how do we work these things out? And my view is that the right policy for Canada, at least in principle, is for us to uphold to the world certain common standards and say, in every case, we will apply this. There is no exceptionalism. America and Russia and nobody can break these rules without us condemning them.
Barbara McDougall, you're a former Minister of External Affairs. Can that work in real life for a government?
No. And I agree with Jerry. It would be very nice to be able to do that. But you can't do that. I'll use China as an example. I happened to be around at the time of Tiananmen Square, and in our government after that, we had a policy of no senior ministers, including the prime minister, visiting China. So I never visited China officially when I was a minister. And Brian Mulroney didn't either after that. In the meantime, you know, there were trade missions and business people sneaking in and out, and we were trying to do something on the human rights side, but we had a very difficult time having any impact, partly because we're small. And the Chinese foreign minister would say to me at every meeting we were at together, "So, Mrs. McDougall, Excellency," he'd say, "when are we going to have cordial relations again?" And we didn't while we were there. First of all, it didn't make a dent. And secondly, it did hurt our trade interests.
Okay, I want to move on to Afghanistan. Although Canada did not support the war in Iraq, there are calls for Canada to participate there now to help rebuild and establish order. Now, Afghanistan is one country where we are doing this. We have a postcard from Afghanistan, an audio postcard, if you will. And throughout this conversation today, we're going to check in with Canadians overseas with these audio postcards to hear what is happening where they are and what they would like to see the next Canadian government do. So our first dispatch is from Herat in Afghanistan.
My name is Jane McElhone. I am the project director for the Afghanistan Project for Impacts, which is a Canadian NGO. We are a media development project. We focus our work on women. We build community radio stations. We've established three of them so far. The Canadian government supports all of the work that we do here in Afghanistan. The goal is that they are and they will become strong Afghan institutions so that when we leave this country, they will remain.
You always have to know that you are leaving the country. But it's important to stay long enough so that you can really pass on those skills and you can really make a difference.
Okay, well, with a little bit of varied sound there, that was Jane McElhone, a Canadian who is developing independent radio stations throughout Afghanistan. It's the IMPACTS, a Canadian NGO. Akash, what do you think about her point about building institutions and being committed for the long haul?
Absolutely. Many of the problems that we are currently facing in the world, in Afghanistan and to a lesser extent in Iraq, have been the products of invading armies which have sought a short-term solution at the end of the barrel of a gun and have in many cases quite correctly deposed of people who are brutal dictators. But the question then follows, what happens next? At the end of the day, I think as Canadians we recognize that our well-being and our security is inextricably linked to the well-being and security of people in every other country of the world. And helping to build stable democracies that are able to themselves rebuff the leer of authoritarianism and of fundamentalism is as much in our interest as it is in the interest of the people of Afghanistan.
Barbara McDougall, we're doing this as well with our military. How much of this kind of work can we do with the military that we have?
Well, we can't do much more than we're doing now. I should say that institution building is important. And in Haiti, for example, in the first crisis in the early 90s, the world went in and monitored the election in which Jean-Bertrand Aristide was first elected. A truly dreadful person, but you don't always get the leader that you want, even democratically. And we played an active role in trying to get him back into power. But one of the problems was that after the election had been monitored, nobody stayed to help build a parliament or a court system or an economy. But everybody said, okay, we monitored the election, we're out of here. And then we got into a coup, we had no institutions, and it is hugely important, and you do have to be there a long time. You can't leave in 6 months.
But it's not clear you can. I happen to know the IMPACTS NGO very well. They're wonderful people. They do terrific things around the world. But it's not up to them whether they stay there for a long time. It's up to whether the virtual collapse of most of Afghanistan in the last year and a half, reaching almost to Kabul, will allow them to stay. Let me segue into some issues I know you intend to raise. To the surprise of many, I think you may find, Iraq and Afghanistan are now the first and second recipients of foreign aid from Canada. This is as compared to Africa, which is not which no country is first or second. And in fact, Iraq and Afghanistan, which have 50 million people between them, now get more foreign aid and will for the entire rest of this decade than the 800 million people of Africa.
And I do want to raise that a little later, so I'm going to pick up on something else just to keep on topic here for a minute. And that is, if we're going to do some of this, we are also doing it with our military. And what changes would you want to see with our military and its role in relation to that kind of institution building?
I think we need a complete revamping and a great deal more money spent on the military. That is not a typical left position. But you cannot be a serious peacekeeper and more important, a peacemaker. The distinction is peacekeeping is relatively easy. Peacekeeping goes into areas where the sides have agreed they will have peace. Peacemaking goes into an area where you have to enforce peace.
It's aggressive and dangerous.
It's aggressive, it's dangerous, and soldiers get killed. And one of the strange ironies of the last 10 years that happened in Rwanda, it happened in the Congo, is the United Nations says it will only send in troops where they're not in danger of getting killed. And this General Romeo Dallaire said, sorry, that's not what the role of soldiers are. The role of soldiers is that they may have to get killed, like it or not.
Okay, hold that thought. We have to take a short break. And when we return, we will continue our conversation about Canada's place on the world stage. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and this is The Current on CBC Radio 1. Hello again, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti and you're listening to The Current. We have been talking about Canada and what shape our foreign policy should take. I am speaking with Barbara McDougall, former Secretary of State for External Affairs with the Progressive Conservative Party under Brian Mulroney, now an advisor at the law firm of Aird and Burliss. Jerry Kaplan is a former General Secretary with the NDP and now works in the area of Africa and developing countries. And Akash Maharaj is the former National Policy Chair with the Liberal Party, currently the President of Concordis, a not-for-profit organization dedicated to international peace and armed conflict resolution. Well, Jerry Kaplan, before the break, we were talking about the military and foreign aid, and you were making a point about regions like Africa. As you made a point, a large part of our foreign aid budget is directed at Afghanistan and Iraq, and there are calls for us to be more involved there. We're going to play another one of our audio postcards. This is from a Canadian working in sub-Saharan Africa, and she's talking about what she would like our next government to do. Here is a postcard from Zambia.
My name is Brenda Kupper. I'm the country director for CARE International in Zambia. Human development indicators in Zambia are appalling. We have an HIV and AIDS prevalence rate, 20%. 80% of the population lives below the poverty line, and Zambia has chronic, serious food insecurity. I would want to see a sustained and increased engagement by the Canadian government to both trade and aid in countries like Zambia, which have made significant progress. A second area for Canada is in the fight against HIV and AIDS. Zambia and sub-Saharan Africa and many other countries in Africa are actually going backwards, and it is important that Canada continue to take leadership in the fight against HIV and AIDS as well.
Okay, that was Brenda Kupper. She's a Canadian aid worker in Zambia. Akash Maharaj, what should our priorities be in Africa? Should it be trade, HIV/AIDS? Should it be trying to stop conflicts?
Well, it's often difficult to choose a single priority, given that it is a continent that's crying out for so much assistance. And I do have to agree that the silent carnage going on in Africa is far graver than, if I may use the term, the more glamorous issues going on in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. The deaths from HIV and malnutrition in Africa today are the equivalent of a 747 crashing every hour. I think that the far less glamorous, far more complex issues of ensuring that countries in the developing world, particularly in Africa, have free and fair access to international markets is vital. I think Canadian politicians need to be more forceful when we deal with our colleagues in the European Union and in the United States, and to make the point that protectionism has a price, and it's a price that's paid in blood.
Barbara McDougall, can you pick a priority there? Trade, HIV/AIDS, trying to help stop conflicts?
First of all, I think that local economies, community economies have to be built up as well as trade, but trade does trump aid in terms of building up the African system. Our aid everywhere is lower than it's been since the 1950s as a percent of GDP. It should be directed more towards Africa, but we can't ignore the crises like Darfur and others that we've known about for quite a long time. It's been building, and we thought it was going to be over, and it isn't.
And Marie, I would guess that like healthcare, Canadians see peacekeeping and foreign aid as kind of defining characteristics, wonderful, self-loving, self-satisfying characteristics of Canada. It's all untrue, as Barbara was just saying. Our aid is lower than it ever been, and it will now take another 10 years for it to get to be three-quarters of it was 10 years ago.
So how do we pick what we do, looking at finite amounts of money?
Well, you need more money, and one of the things you do is you tax people, Canadians, more if they want to do this. So as we are 12th in the world in donations of foreign aid, not first or second as Canadians, I'm sure, believe, we are also 31st in the world in the contribution to peacekeeping forces. And I think we should understand how far behind we've fallen from our own self-images. And thirdly, sorry, Barbara, trade may in principle be the way to build economies. But at the moment, international trade is killing Africa and a good part of the third world because of the EU and American subsidies to cotton and sugar and all the other crops that, in fact, Africa grows and Latin America grows. And we are costing them vastly more billions of dollars by the subsidies than we are giving them in all the aid in the world. So all of this meshes together, too.
Sorry, I
don't want to go into another. There's two things. One is we need to raise more money, and I think we need a politician somewhere in this country to come out and say, if Canada is going to be what you want it to be internationally at home, we need more taxes.
Okay. I want to move to another aspect of our foreign policy, and that of trade and the economy. Let's hear from one Canadian working internationally who wants our government to pay closer attention to the needs of the business community abroad. This is a postcard from Mexico.
My name is Kathy Gregoire. I'm the general manager for the Canadian Chamber of Commerce in Mexico. The biggest issue that Canadian companies find is renegotiating or looking at NAFTA, because the interpretation, for example, of bidding practices here in Mexico is quite different, and that affects the cost of doing business here for Canadian companies. I think if we as a chamber had the year of the next foreign minister, some of the major issues is to deal with Asia. Asia's flooding North America market, and as a NAFTA bloc, I think perhaps the three countries could probably try to work closer together to deal with this issue.
Well, that was Kathy Gregoire from the Canadian Chamber of Commerce in Mexico. Barbara McDougall, how important is international trade to our foreign policy?
Well, it's very important to our prosperity, and you can't de-link it from foreign policy, particularly when it's close to home like Mexico, where we do have a trade agreement. Trade, to me, should not be an instrument of foreign policy in the sense of we give our aid to countries that can help us build up trade links. I think aid should be separated from it.
Akash?
International trade is being increasingly dominated, and I think rightly so, by multilateral agencies like the World Trade Organization. And one of the great paradoxes in the international sphere is that most democratic institutions are not powerful, and most powerful institutions are not democratic. I think that as more and more sovereignty from nation states are delegated to multilateral agencies like the WTO, like the International Monetary Fund, we have a duty to ensure that these organizations operate in a more transparent way, and that in particular, one of the prices of entry into these organizations is that countries will not receive the benefits of free trade unless they agree to respect basic issues of environmental protection, labor standards, and human rights.
Is that happening, though, or is there a danger that economic interests get in the way of human rights?
I think it is happening more now than it was previously, largely because not just Canadians, but people across the world are waking up to the importance of these institutions. And to be fair, institutions, particularly the World Bank, have signaled a willingness to engage with the NGO community.
I take a much harder line. The WTO and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have done incalculable damage to every poor country in the world. Trade by itself, free markets by themselves, I approve of all that. Capitalism by itself, I'm not a stupid socialist, I hope, are all important, but by themselves, they have major, major limitations. The World Bank admits, IMF admits, that the kind of economic policies they have forced, and I want to tell you that forced is exactly the right word, on every poor country in the world, have not only led to a lack of social justice and equal distribution in all these countries like Zambia that our caller talked about, but they haven't led to growth either. And yet they are powerful beyond words. They are, each of them, the WTO, the IMF, and the World Bank, controlled by two or three or four of the richest countries in the world, and it never works fairly. And we have, Barbara must have appointed them in her time as minister, we have representatives on the World Bank and the IMF. That's part of being a rich country. We have one or two, probably. And to my knowledge, I've never heard them stand up there and say, maybe because there's no transparency, look, you guys, you're just running things the wrong way, and this neoliberal economic policy that you're forcing in the poor country is devastating.
Barbara McDougall, if you have, Canada sits on these agencies and others as well, how realistic is it to expect Canada to make these organizations sit up and change some of their ways if you were to agree with Jerry?
Well,
I'm not sure you do. But
I mean, how could you not agree with Jerry? I mean,
it's the story of my life.
God are always on the same side. But
whether God knows it or not.
And I don't even believe in it.
But there are also, and we mustn't forget about these, regional development banks, the Asian Development Bank, the African Development Bank, and they are even less transparent than the big international ones, and we rep there too. But the people who are actually there are bureaucrats, they're government appointees, so, I mean, it's their job to support Canada's sovereign policy in dealing with the agency they're involved with. So if they're going to stand up and say anything, they have to have the government behind them doing that. But not all countries also are at the same level of human rights and environmental protection. And we can't say, okay, you've got to meet a certain standard or we won't deal with you, or we won't give you aid, because they'll never get there. I mean, it's going to take decades for some of these
people. Depends where you set the standards. I just have to take issue with the overarching theme of Jerry's comment. We were speaking earlier about the need for countries in intervening militarily in other states. The UN is a highly flawed institution, but we recognize that better a flawed institution than the law of the jungle. I would argue the same thing applies to economic activity. Yes, the World Trade Organization, yes, the IMF are highly flawed institutions, but even poor countries are better off within a system of the rule of law than at the mercy of the unregulated tyranny of the strong.
Well, let me pick up on the UN. Let me ask you, what reforms would you want to see in the UN?
Within the United Nations?
Yeah.
I would like to see in the best of all possible worlds, and I have to say, as someone who has worked within the Liberal Party on reform of the Senate, you know how frustrating that is, I have no illusions about what's involved in reforming the United Nations. But I would like to see the Security Council reconstituted to recognize the genuine distribution of power in the world today. The fact
you're talking the inner circle.
Yes, the permanent members. Given that both the United Kingdom and France are permanent members, but neither Japan nor India are, is a little absurd. Moreover, I would like to see the Economic and Social Development Council be given more power and more influence. I'd like to see the General Assembly be able to initiate more rather than wait upon the pleasure of the permanent members of the Security Council.
Good. Giving more power to the General Assembly doesn't turn my chimes, I'll tell you. No. Let me give you a perspective about, I agree, of course, about the United Nations. Every time you work with them, you go crazy. Barbara know that better than either of us, but I've done it a dozen times. You just want to tear your hair out. This is better than nothing. After all these years, after 20 or 30 or 40 years, of the World Bank and the IMF and the WTO, although it's newer, and the UN. Let me give you some figures. I know that data can confuse. These are per capita public health expenditures. In Canada, we spend in American dollars $1,657 a year per capita on public health, right? 1,657. In Rwanda, it's 14. Not in 1,400, it's $14. In Burundi, it's $5. In Nigeria, it's $7. I'm just trying to give a sense of the scale of what all three of us are talking about, because we all agree about the problem of poverty in the third world. But I think what most Canadians don't quite understand is how terribly picayune, how trivial, how negligible the resources of these countries are. So when we talk about Canadian generosity, when we talk about Canadian advocacy, we have to talk about what a meager part of our world that really plays and how little we've done. As the woman from Zambia and CARE International said, those countries are going backwards and some of them are in danger of disappearing thanks to AIDS and economic collapse.
And murderous policies on the part of rebels and guerrillas and so on.
And their governments, I certainly agree.
In terms of the role of the United Nations, there are United Nations agencies that do a really good job with very limited resources, and they operate under the radar, so we should leave them alone and let them do it. The problems with the UN are at the political level and at the policy level. I'm feeling very discouraged about the UN. I applied for a job at the UN when I graduated from school. They turned me down because I didn't have a doctorate. Jerry, can you imagine? But I think Canadians are relatively idealistic about the UN, but the UN, right or wrong, is not anymore a route that I would go.
Well, let me ask you, too, about the UN militarily, because the conflict in Kosovo, for example, was dealt through NATO, not through the UN. The UN obviously did not sanction the war in Iraq. Does Canada put too much faith in the UN's ability to resolve international problems?
Canada says the UN, right or wrong, and whatever they do, we're for them.
I don't think that's true.
Well,
it is a serious problem.
Maybe an exaggeration, but not much. And the encouragement that we give to our governments to go through the UN, I think, is dangerous from our own sovereignty point of view.
Well, let me pick up on that.
Because it becomes a crutch.
But I have to say, Kosovo is the ideal example where that's not the case. The UN, the United Nations, did not sanction military intervention into the former Yugoslavia because of vetoes on the Security Council. Canada, nevertheless, decided that we would join NATO in the military campaign.
But if, in fact, that, as you point out, that maybe we shouldn't be relying on how the UN looks at things all the time, and we haven't in the past with the example of Kosovo, what are the criteria about when we should get involved in something like conflict? What do we do? What do you want to see the government that forms after June 28th do?
I'd like the government to be involved somewhere in Eastern Congo and in Darfur, and I want to tell you as I sit here that I don't know how that happens, that it's extraordinarily difficult, but it's the right thing to do.
Well, let me ask again, if we're not going to look at some of the multilateral organizations to do this, Barbara McDougall, under Brian Mulroney, Canada took a stand on South Africa when it was unpopular. The United States wasn't doing it. Britain wasn't
doing
it.
Their finest moment.
Are there times when Canada should stand up outside of these organizations
yes.
then? Do you want
to
see this?
Yes, absolutely. I do think so. I wouldn't want to see us stand outside the rule of law, so-called, as a matter of course. But there are times when we have to lead, and we, in that case, we not only stood up against the others, we led and eventually got a policy, an international policy of sanctions and other things on South
but
Africa.
And it was within, very much within the principles of Canada. I said a second ago, I say it again, it was Brian Mulroney's and your government's proudest moment. It said that Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher were taking most reactionary, virtually racist positions on South Africa, and Mulroney stood up, and he stood up at the Commonwealth to Thatcher, who didn't appreciate it one bit, and said, Canadian principles say we are supporting the African National Congress, and we are supporting the fight against apartheid, even though you call them communists and you hate them, and are working together with them, with Thatcher and Reagan did. And it was just a wonderful, so the moral principle there was clear. And for Canada to say, here's our principles, you know what they are, we're going to apply them in Iraq and Afghanistan and Africa, I think it's a wonderful
thing. We are running out of time, but I want a brief answer from each of you on, just give me your opinion on this, what will be the biggest challenge for the new government when it comes to foreign policy? Akash Maharaj.
I hope the new government will be a liberal government, and it will be to fulfill the dream of all liberals, and that is to foster a web of coherent international institutions that will enforce the ideal that the laws that in the international community, the laws that bind the weak and the powerless must no less bind the great and the powerful.
Barbara McDougall.
The biggest challenge to the new Conservative government is going to be convincing the Canadian people that we need more money to do any of the things we've talked about today. And the Canadian people have to be behind it. I'm not sure that's an easy or short-term sell.
The great challenge for Prime Minister Layton, which I can barely say with a straight face or a straight voice, is dealing with the United States. We began by talking about that as the key issue in Canadian foreign policy, and it remains that, and how Canada can assert its values in the world without the Americans invading us remains our biggest challenge.
Well, I can thank you all for not getting partisan until the very end.
Entitled
thank
to
you.
One crack. You know.
Jerry Kaplan, Barbara McDougall, Akash Maharaj, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great
thank
discussion.
You.
Barbara McDougall is the former Secretary of State for External Affairs in Brian Mulroney's Progressive Conservative government. She is now an advisor at the law firm of Aird and Burliss. Jerry Kaplan is a former General Secretary to the NDP. He has been involved in Africa, African and developing world issues for decades, and he worked at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. Akash Maharaj was the Liberal Party's National Policy Chair for 5 years. He is currently President of Concordis, a not-for-profit organization dedicated to international peace and armed conflict resolution. They